China does not seem to be a principal subject of debate among the candidates, but it does seem to be the subtext for a lot of the issues that they're talking about. I'm wondering how you think China is going to play in this campaign and how you would describe the role that it is playing in the campaign.
Well, I think foreign policy in the classic sense of the term has not yet played a significant role in the campaign. I do think, though, that because of the complexities associated with what we call the rise of China, it is very, very likely to emerge more fully in the course of the coming months, not least of which because of the comprehensive nature of China's development and the fact that the prevailing approaches between the Republican candidate, probable Republican candidate, and President Obama are fairly starkly drawn. So by that logic, I think we should anticipate that if there are any areas of foreign policy likely to emerge, China would be very high on that list.
Now, you say that the approaches are starkly drawn. Let's start by talking about the president's approach. You know, everybody runs for office saying that they're going to take a tough line on China, and then they get into office and there seems to be a softening of that. Has that been the pattern with Obama, and how would you sketch out his sort of 3 years of China policy?
Actually, in Obama's case, I would say it's been different from the prior instances where someone running from the other party came in and said, I'm going to go about this differently. Obama very, very early clearly assented to and endorsed much of what the Bush administration had achieved vis-a-vis China. Since over the course of President Bush's two terms in office, the relationship became much steadier in a lot of ways. It was very, very good at a political and an interpersonal level, that is to say at the White House. And Obama looked at the totality of this and said, I'm not going to come into office, in effect trashing what my predecessor did. He was going to try to build on it and extend it in a variety of ways. So he came in intent on redirecting matters to some extent, if only because he felt that the United States had been so distracted by events in the greater Middle East, and that had led to, quite literally, an imbalance in America's attention. Because, of course, the Bush presidency was associated not only with our preoccupations with the post 9/11 world, but of course, this was the same time that China had entered the WTO. China entered the WTO in 2001, the same year as 9/11, and that was this year of just an absolute takeoff in the Chinese economy, particularly export-oriented growth. So when things unraveled at the end of the Bush administration with our financial crisis, China became the focal point, if you will, in a lot of Obama's thinking as he approached China at the outset of his administration. Over time, I would say, the president has modified his policy. It's become somewhat more measured, not because his expectations with China are not substantial, but there's more of an element of hedge in it, a sense that the scope of China's emergence means that on the one hand, we have to try very, very hard to establish a much more certain basis of our bilateral relations. But on the other hand, anxieties about China's emergence, particularly on the part of a lot of China's neighbors, meant that the United States had to be much more clear and present about its long-term commitment to the Asia-Pacific region without making China, if you will, the identified object of that.
How should we understand the relative benefits and problems of Obama's China policy?
I think if you look at it from the level of, let's just say, the White House, the dealings at a high level between the United States and China, I think that there's actually cause for a fair degree of satisfaction. The communication that we have between the two leaderships, the regularity with which they meet, the frequency of phone conversations and the like has probably never been more intensive than it is today. You can extend that beyond dealings in the immediate executive branch with the kinds of relationships that exist across cabinet departments, the strategic and economic dialogue, for example. It had a predecessor in the Bush administration, but it's much more fleshed out now. The intensity and the scope of these meetings is very, very great. Now, all of that is on the plus side. On the minus side, I think, there is often a frustration that despite the declared incentives or intention of the Chinese leadership to work with the United States, there are specific instances and issues where the Obama administration has been openly dissatisfied with China's responses. Much of this is focused, for example, on economic differences. The president has been really quite vocal and explicit about what his feeling that China is often not playing by the rules. It's a major beneficiary, obviously, of globalization. And yet what the president sees is China intent on still setting up its own rules, if you will, to favor its own industries, for example, to deny American companies some of the access and opportunities that we would like to have in the Chinese market, which, of course, continues to grow. So it's kind of a good news, bad news story. On the one hand, the scope and scale of our economic interaction with China has grown hugely. China this year has just passed for the first time the $100 billion figure as an export market for the United States. So right now, China is there directly up at the absolute top tier of U.S. export markets, along with Canada and Mexico. And I suspect, if anything, it's going to grow significantly in the years to come. But it's that sense of the trying to get two very different systems to mesh satisfactorily, recognizing also that the way leadership is conducted in China is just done differently than it's done here. So I'd say that there have been growing pains, there's been learning, but the sense of somewhat incompleteness, I think, still would prevail, particularly in terms of the contours of the political-economic relationship. The other aspect, of course, that requires clear focus is the military-to-military relationship, and that has been very episodic, I think, very unsatisfactory in a lot of respects, and maybe in a lot of respects one of the biggest question marks for the longer term.
And along that similar lines, you know, one of the things you hear a lot from the administration publicly is, you know, anger, dissatisfaction, fear of China in the cyber arena. Mm-hmm. You know, is there, what are the sort of major flashpoint areas where, you know, you kind of look at the U.S.-China relationship and say, boy, you know, that's an area that could blow up relatively quickly?
I would put cybersecurity very, very high on that list. There are repeated claims and determinations from the United States government and as well from American companies of intrusions or worse into their protected space that have origins, many believe, with Chinese entities. Whether it has the concurrence and the blessing of the Chinese leadership, of course, is a much even a bigger issue, if you will. But the frequency of these allegations and claims really can't be discounted. So there's a real worry that that we're being permeated and penetrated in a variety of ways, both in terms of corporate secrets, in terms of national security information, in terms of simply our own deliberations, whether they are in the government or in private organizations, including Brookings, about how we look at China and how we deal with China. So this is really a cause for worry. The Chinese, for their part, insist that they are as much victims in this process as anybody else, and claim that there are lots of intrusions into their government websites, efforts to elicit information or put in false information, all that. So one way or another, this is going to be a very, very high priority in coming years, just given the nature of these issues, the sensitivities about protection of intellectual property, protection of national security information, and the sense that in this new world in which we operate, a lot of things are vulnerable in the way that they were not in the past.
So the critique of the administration's policies, if you're a Republican candidate, mm-hmm. What's the tone of the, what are you proposing that is starkly different from what the administration has laid out over the last few years as the sort of basis for this relationship?
I think that there are stark differences, at least on paper and declared intention, in at least three areas. On the economic dimension, for example, Governor Romney, who looks to be the likely Republican nominee, has said that he will declare China on day one of his presidency, if elected, a currency manipulator. Now, putting aside the fact that that's a determination for the Treasury Department to make, he's really staking a claim to, in effect, say, the terms of our economic relationship are simply unsatisfactory because, in effect, the Chinese government's hand or thumb is on the scale, you know, making it much more difficult for America to compete economically. Now, putting aside the fact that the Chinese currency, the yuan, continues to appreciate, and this is openly acknowledged by spokesmen in the Obama administration, including Treasury Secretary Geithner, his almost a declaration of war, if you will, on day one of his presidency injects a potential instability, frankly, in the relationship, as contrast by what has been the Obama administration's approach, which, again, takes issue with Chinese policy, but does not try to make it an open confrontation, if you will. So that's number one. Number two, certainly Governor Romney, in some of his statements, has been much harsher on China's human rights policy, claiming that the administration has cut China too much slack in its policy, is too ready to accommodate to the Chinese. This is an issue, I think, for every sitting president, but Romney is clearly making a major claim there. And last, and by no means least, Governor Romney has said that we will significantly increase the level of our defense effort and the level of our military presence on areas around China, that we will increase significantly the rate at which we build ships, our efforts on ballistic missile defense, and other areas which he is arguing China is the object of this. So it's not to say that Obama or the Obama Defense Department has not tried to reposition U.S. policy, and we certainly see major changes, but Romney, in effect, is saying, you're not doing nearly enough, and we're going to do much more if I'm elected.
And how much of that is plausible, and how much of that is the sort of, you know, opposition during a campaign always says the administration isn't doing enough, should be tougher with our adversaries or frenemies, or, you know, what I don't know quite how you describe the U.S.-China relationship, but you know, is it plausible for a U.S. administration to take a much more confrontational posture toward China, given the amount of U.S. debt that China holds, the degree of our mutual trade dependency, and, you know, the myriad strategic issues in Asia that we have to contend with them in order to get done what we want to get done?
Well, talk is cheap. Defense expenditure is not. I would say that a lot of us have tried to parse the numbers that are coming out of the Romney campaign, and it's really difficult to see in the context of his promises to sharply reduce taxes where exactly you're going to be able to get that kind of surge in defense expenditure and a surge in defense procurement as well, with particular emphasis on the Navy and presumably the Air Force, given that those would be the services that would be much more relevant to some kind of notional strategic competition with China. Whether in the totality of our relationship this is really realistic, or whether we think that that the Chinese would simply be supine and acceptant of this kind of a shift in strategy, those are issues that I don't think are getting a full airing yet, at least in the campaign, because it would seem to me that in a lot of ways it does seem to be more the kind of rhetoric that is offered in a campaign rather than the practical realities that any president is going to face dealing with a relationship as large and as complex as the one with China.
So what do you recommend for the next administration? You have one candidate who has, you know, promised to be much more aggressive. You have an administration that is in some ways frustrated with what it's been able to get done, but has been able to get done a certain set of things. What's the happy medium that the next president should, whoever wins, should pursue?
I'm not sure I see it even as a happy medium. I think the question that will be posed for the next president is that, will it be possible to achieve with China a much more sustainable, shared commitment to much more ambitious goals in the bilateral relationship, given what still seem to be the mutual stakes that are there? In other words, even if we recognize the frustrations and the difficulties of arriving at shared sentiments with China, it's not clear to me what the alternative would be unless we are prepared for a world which leaves a U.S.-China relationship much less steady and much less uncertain. Let's remember, I mean, one way or another, China is going to have the world's biggest economy, you know, depending on how you measure it, sometime over the coming decade or so. They're going to be that much bigger. We're going to be, along with China, the world's biggest economies. I'm not trying to say that that makes it a G2 world. I don't quite subscribe to that kind of a logic, but there's no question but that this will be at the center of any administration's dealings on international economics, international politics, diplomacy, and on international security. So the question for any, whoever the next president is how much do you make collaboration with China the centerpiece of this activity? Remember also, China is now on the cusp of its own political succession process. China overturns its top leadership nominally every 5 years, but more effectively every 10, and they're going to have another party congress late this year, in the fall sometime, that will bless a new leadership. So of those 9 individuals at the top of the Chinese system, 7 will be new faces. There's a lot of ferment in China right now, a lot of pressure and expectation of change, and without having a kind of a dreamy-eyed sense of what is possible, the fact is that the next president will be inaugurated in January. He will be dealing with a leadership in China that is not totally unfamiliar to the United States, in that the presumptive successor to top leadership in China, Vice President Xi Jinping, has been to the United States now, and of course, Vice President Biden went to China some months ago. So we have a sense that of who we're dealing with to an extent, but what we don't know is the array of relationships within their own system, which are not going to be consummated overnight. It's going to take time. But the question would be, can a new administration come in with a determination, A, to make a major continued effort to sustain collaboration with China and build on it in critical respects? A sense that whether it's on issues like energy security, whether it's issues like climate change, whether it's issues like the international financial system, whether it's issues of non-proliferation, in which, again, North Korea and Iran factor right at the top. The idea that we will have to be working with China in this context or testing these possibilities. At the same time, as the United States tries to make its if you will, its exit from its preoccupations, not only in the greater Middle East, but in Southwest Asia as a whole, we find a way to work with China on these issues, or it is potentially much less predictable. Indeed, the current administration even says we don't want to see ourselves withdrawing there. The stakes are too high. But China, as an economic actor and increasingly as a political actor, is more and more a factor in that equation. So there won't be an easy alternative to dealing with China. But this is always going to be a somewhat contentious relationship, where we're trying to build a measure of mutual trust with China, trying to bound the areas of competition, trying to look for areas where there are clearly complementary, if not totally shared, interests. And frankly, I don't know whether it's a second term for President Obama or whether Governor Romney succeeds to the presidency. I'm not convinced that the agenda is going to look all that different unless the president tries to make it look different in a way that could engender, I think, a lot of uncertainty all its own.
So if you had to make 3-4 specific concrete agenda recommendations for the next administration vis-a-vis China, what are they?
Well, the first would be, don't dismantle what I believe we have achieved. don't, in effect, try to say we're going to start all over again, because you can't. That's number one. Number two would be, I think, to have a much more elevated discussion and debate about our economic relationship in its larger context. That would have to include questions of our policy on investment that we permit in the United States. A lot of the signals coming from the Chinese is that they want to invest more in the United States, but feel that there are a lot of inhibitions, national security related and the like, that confront it. So I think the next administration will have to continue its effort to seriously explore the ground rules here, how U.S. policy enables American companies to compete, and whether or not we are prepared to see much more investment from China in the United States as its industrial base continues to grow. A third recommendation would be a much more of an effort to really establish a far more embedded and stable relationship between our respective militaries. If we do not, what we might see is that to a much greater extent than I think either we or the Chinese would seek, we will see a relationship that becomes dominated by national security and even by our respective military preparations, rather than looking at the totality of relations as China continues its internal transformation in all kinds of respects. So the last bit of advice I might make is that whatever the frustrations and difficulties with China, we need to be mindful of that, but at the same time, don't feel so inhibited by it that we're not prepared to test the possibilities of a much deeper and sustaining relationship over the coming decade.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.